Last spring, Andrew and I had the opportunity to walk the Camino de Santiago, or the Way of St. James, a pilgrimage to the place where St. James, the very James mentioned in this gospel, is buried. Spoiler alert, I'll be talking about this more in the Lenten series next week. Andrew and I walked from St. John Pied-de-Port on the French side of the Pyrenees across most of the northern part of Spain, about 500 miles. I had dreamed of this trip for 10 years. The people I know who had done it had all said it was amazing. And yet, in the days and the weeks before I went, I grew more and more afraid. I'd read books, watched movies, made about 40 trips to REI. We had trained, but I didn't really know what it was actually going to be like. And what's more, this dream took root in my 20s, when I was routinely doing more adventurous things. But now I'd become something of a homebody, and I was nervous about being away from home, away from comfort and familiarity and safety for so long. But I had committed to this, and so I went. And having finished it, I can tell you, it was amazing. Sometimes. There were literal mountaintop moments in the most beautiful places I've ever seen. An afternoon drinking a café con leche in solitude at a sun-drenched café, feeling deeply contented. Running into pilgrim friends we hadn't seen for weeks and thought we might never see again. The moment that we saw the spires of the cathedral in the distance. And when we finally arrived there after 36 days and just sat down in front of it, taking it all in. Some of it was awful. Days where every step was painful. Bedbugs, which was less about the bites than the sleepless paranoia that they caused. Food poisoning, twice. Once on an 18-kilometer stretch with nothing but open farmland, in the rain, and, to be very honest, sometimes it was just boring. I'd keep putting one foot in front of the other, trying to get through the day. But even with the pain and the boredom, I don't regret it for one second. That's what's on my mind this week, as we hear the story of the Transfiguration. Jesus has gone up to the mountain to pray with his friends, and suddenly he's transformed into the most true version of himself. Light is leaking from his pores, and his dusty and dirty clothes are suddenly dazzling white. Beside him stand Moses and Elijah, and that cloud overtakes them, and a voice says, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." This story is full of mystery and glory. I will confess that I kind of hate it. Part of it is that it comes every year, demanding that preachers find something to say in the face of that which leaves Peter senseless. And probably a bigger part of it is the shininess, the glory. It makes me suspicious. Because most of the time, my life doesn't feel like that at all. So I'm not sure what the Transfiguration has to say to me. But the Transfiguration is not the whole story. It's one part of a larger picture. Just before this gospel, Jesus tells his disciples, for the first time, what it really means to be the Son of God, that he will undergo great suffering and be rejected and killed. This is such a surprise to the disciples that in the other Gospels, Peter actually rebukes Jesus for saying this. And as if that wasn't enough to take in, Jesus goes on to say that anyone who wishes to be his disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow. All of that comes just before this passage, before this glory. And afterwards, it doesn't get any better. Jesus comes down from the mountain and sets his face for Jerusalem. He summons his courage and his strength and heads to the place where he knows that he will be crucified. So I have great compassion for Peter, who has just received this hard news, news that upends everything he thought he knew. It is good to be here, on this mountain, apart from the crowds that are desperate for good news and for healing, and apart from those who will soon begin to plot Jesus' death. It is good to be here where the truth is so clear and where it is beautiful and safe. But you cannot have safety and glory. A few years ago, I took a class designed by the mindfulness pioneer Jon Kabat-Zinn. His seminal book on the subject is called Full Catastrophe Living. He writes, "Catastrophe here does not mean disaster. Rather, it means the poignant enormity of our life experience. It's the glory and the struggle and the pain and the joy and the boredom and the anxiety, the whole thing." The purpose of the class was to learn how not to do all of the strategies that we use to avoid the present moment, the distractions, the numbing, the barriers we erect to protect ourselves. Just beginning to learn these practices took 8 weeks of classes with daily practice. The choice in this case was black and white. You can either protect yourself, placing a buffer between you and life, or you can experience the full catastrophe. You can have safety, or you can have glory, and also the struggle and pain, and the whole poignant enormity of human experience. God chose to leave the safety and detachment of the heavens to become human. And on the very first Sunday of this season, after Epiphany, we remembered Jesus' baptism. In that baptism, Jesus left behind the relative safety and familiarity and obscurity of his youth to begin his ministry. And in that baptism, he chose to become vulnerable to suffering and to struggle and to glory. There could be no other way. There is no transfiguration, no resurrection without the passion and death. There is no glory without the struggle. As it is for Jesus, so it is for us. And it begins here, with baptism. We Christians sometimes think of baptism as a kind of spiritual protection. And in a way, that's true, but maybe not in the way we might imagine. The baptismal waters are anything but tame. They are made of the same elements as tsunamis and floods, blizzards and hurricanes. And they're made as the same elements as the Red Sea and the River Jordan. In baptism, we are taken from the comfort and familiarity of our parents' arms and plunged into this wild water and into the life of Jesus. As much as we might long for it, it does not protect us from danger. And it does not even protect us from hell. We never needed that, because none of us, baptized or not, is beyond the reach of God's care. The protection that we receive in the waters of baptism is the assurance that we are united with Christ and each other. And because of that, whatever might happen to us, danger or death or evil, will not have the last word. That assurance prepares us to follow Jesus in leaving behind safety, familiarity, and comfort for the full catastrophe, for the struggle and the pain and the joy and, yes, the glory for which all of us were created. Amen.